Welcome back to In the Moment. Let's get back to our conversation with Tim Hazlett and Twain Fink. Principal Hazlett is with Roosevelt High School in Sioux Falls. Principal Fink leads Whittier Middle School in Sioux Falls. When we watch the news and we talk about how people are sort of, picking apart where we're at as a culture right now, you hear a lot of negativity. You know, kids are under pressure. Kids are on their phones all day. Kids are watching these video games and such. When I sit down with you and have these conversations, there's a much more positive story. What do you think, Twain, we'll start with you. What do you think parents and people who don't have kids in the public school system really need to understand about what's happening inside the walls of South Dakota schools?
That's a great question, because you're exactly right. I think until you come into a school, you don't know what has changed. And even in the 20-some years that I've been an administrator, things have changed, right, along with some of the 30 years as far as being a kid and then going through. I think when you look, it was a much more structured environment when I was going to school. Everybody was the same, and if you didn't do it, we just had kids who didn't do it, and they just fell by the wayside. And that's not acceptable anymore. And so we have all these students who are doing different things who maybe need more time, support, resources. And so we're putting more of those resources for kids like that. I agree with Tim that we're educating more kids at a higher level than we ever have in our United States. And so when you say things aren't working, I kind of wonder sometimes what data set you're using. On the flip side of that, when you look at some of the great things that our kids are coming out, information used to trains, I think 5 to 7 years, I think, was when they called it the information swap. We're at less than 2 years right now, just because of how fast information is created. And so you've got kids right now who are, look at what's going on with this issue. It's being driven right now supposedly by media, but it's also being driven by a group of high school students. I mean, these are kids who are gifted and who are verbal and who are taking all the skills that they've been taught and are actually using it for a issue they feel very passionate about. That was something, that's what we're trying to teach kids. We're trying to give them the ability to understand you can take this skill set and then use it for what you have a passion for. And so when you look at what we're doing with kids, I would sometimes look and say, well, they've got more ability to be crucial consumers of information than we've ever had. You know, people just don't believe anymore. These kids they're smart and they're street smart, and they don't just take things at Wikipedia for face value. They want to dig in and challenge. And I think if you've created a populace that wants to challenge, and not necessarily challenge to debate or argue, but challenge in far as growth and challenge to say, what if, that has to be created by somebody. I think that's created in schools from where I'm looking at.
I think that, when you deal with these tragedies that happen in the country and have happened, it's something that I believe every principal across every school in the country thinks about probably daily. Because it doesn't, there is a factor that it could possibly happen some places. And you mentioned some things that people are somewhat arguing about over the media, of whether it's gun control or mental health or video gaming or the lack of the structure of the family, and those things are all real, and they're all issues unto themselves. As a high school principal of a large high school, my question changes a little bit instead of why, because that's, I really can't control that, to my question is why schools? Why schools? There's plenty of other places. Schools in South Dakota or in Sioux Falls, for sure, are hardest to get into, harder than many places in the city. You have to check your ID. You have to check in. We have police officers there. So it's really a secure environment. And so then you look and say, you can theorize a million things of why people would turn against that place. But usually that's some kind of angst, some kind of anger, some kind of lack of rejection from the place that turns to anger. Mm-hmm. And it is also that person is identifying with that community as the place that caused that, or the place, I don't know, I can't put myself in the mind of those right. students, but I can theorize as to why. And so what kind of culture would be opposite of that? And that's the one that says, every single person in this place is valuable, and our goal is to help you get to where you want to get. And then that's where when you asked earlier about the We Are Roosevelt, We Are One, is we're going to do it together. And that, when you're together as one thing and your community comes together and you have missions and purposes that you're not afraid to talk about and put out there, we have a Roosevelt Cares Week where we give to other three or four different things during the Christmas season. It's a lot of people have those. But when you connect it as, hey, look, we're a part of this and we're given to other people, and you develop that kind of culture, now the students are already belonging to someone. You don't have to belong to a certain clique or certain this because you're a member of this place that's got an idea that you're part of something greater than yourself as you build that culture. And so your kids that are in basketball or football or drama or show choir might not need the We Are Roosevelt theme as much as those that aren't anything. Mm. But you try to find that connection to make it a community that functions together and cares about each other and has a purpose.
So when I heard this student talking about, you know, We Are Roosevelt, We Are One, and my question was, how do you take something that could be a cliche that kids roll their eyes with and create the student body that believes it? And now I know the answer is because you believe it.
Yeah. It really is. It's something that, and I get that it's a little, it's one of the things you don't overuse anything because it can be like anybody. You can be, oh, here we go again. But that's only if it doesn't matter. Yeah. Only if it's not real. Only if you don't follow that path. So you have to be open to listening to a lot of people because, okay, what does this mean if we're really in this together as one? What should we do? Do you listen to all groups? Do you have time to stop and talk and listen? And we're going to do that. We're going to do that in the future, coming up here in March when there is the planned national walkout of schools by the students. We're going to do it together, something as a community, on that 17 minutes that's coming up in March that they're going to try, that they've been talking about, because we don't want chaos in your schools when people are running around. But we're going to approach it, deal with it, talk about it, and say, hey, here's what we're going to do as a community to commemorate that 17 minutes.
And Twain, when my daughter went to Whittier, one of the things that I noticed when you arrived, and again, you know, all the administrators that we had at Whittier, because we actually ended up having three different ones, coincidentally, in the 3 years she was there, was that you as well took, you could tell how seriously you took the kids. Now, I'm not saying you treated them as adults, you treated them as thinking human beings, I guess, is what I would say, that they had a voice and that you wanted to hear it. How important is it in middle school, when, you know, they're younger than the kids that Tim is dealing with, to really meet them for the thoughtful beings that they are and encourage them to sort of step into that next phase of development, which is thinking for themselves?
Yeah, you talk about me. I think the staff taught me that. I don't know if I necessarily taught the staff that. I think we've got a wonderful group of people who really live that mission. But you've got to know that kids matter, and you've got to know that they've got their own personal voyage. And if you don't connect to that voyage, you'll never find out what they're really feeling. And if you don't ever feel or understand where they're coming from, you'll never be able to take them to the next step. And so part of that is really relating to kids, getting into their world and find out what does matter to them. Why would you want to belong to us? What can we do? And once I find out about you, then I can help you connect to us. But I've got to find out about you. It's never about the kid coming in and saying, yeah, how can I do that? It's about how can we find what connects you, and then we'll connect you to us.
After an event like a school shooting or like a national debate about immigration, when you have such a large immigrant population, or any kind of huge event, you come to work the next day. Is the air different in your school? Does it feel like, or do they show up and they just keep going on with their routines and the expectations? Or like,
our kids are microcosms of society, and so when things ripple in society, they ripple in our schools.
Yeah.
And so when there are people nervous about immigration, there are kids nervous about immigration. And when there are kids nervous about, or adults nervous about schools, there are kids nervous about schools. And so that ripple doesn't stop just because they're kids. We sometimes don't give kids enough credit for the knowledge and understanding that they have. They're very good at understanding feelings and thoughts and reactions. A lot of times they're just a lot more quiet than we are as adults, but they still feel and think just as much as we do.
Tim, your thoughts, especially after a high school shooting where these kids saw video footage, you know, that sort of reminded them of the inside of their own classrooms.
Yeah, I think that in the first day or two after those events, we let the teachers handle them kind of one by, they just do it natural. We let it go like that because of the fact that there is an increase in anxiety in teens across in our population now for any number of reasons. And so you want to make sure that school is still the place that they want it to be. And it's not that you stay that way forever. Like today we had an assembly and I addressed the fact that there was a school shooting, moment of silence, so that you don't seem like you're oblivious to what's really happening. But it's how you do it and how you tend to handle it. So a lot of it, even on that big one, we try to do a case-by-case basis if people are really having trouble with those things. But make sure we always address it and address those things as they come up. And it's there's kind of that little bit of of, you know how everyone thinks America schools are failing if you take a survey, but their own school is good? It's yeah. Like, that's what I think, that there's some comfort in, well, this is, you have to be realistic and know that there are threats and there are things in the world that can happen, but you have to have hope and faith that our place is going to be different. We're going to make it like that without being head in the sand. We take precautions, we have security. Mm-hmm. But those big issues, I think the biggest thing is have the courage to and respect for the students and the people that it affects them, like Twain said, and that they know about it and that we're not afraid to talk about it. And sometimes those things are tough to do, and sometimes they're hard to squeeze in curriculum, but
right.
But that's where those individual relationships with all the staff and teachers come into play a lot. So
what keeps you up at night? What makes you worried?
That's a good question. Do you have anything, Twain?
when you go through things like this, there are 950 families, whether they left for their job in the morning or whether mom was happy to see them leave or whether she wasn't. That child, when they enter your door, is your responsibility. Our biggest nightmare for me is where something would happen. Yeah. I'm in charge of that. And I live, are those doors shut? Are there things that we can do? Because that is, whether they come from a poverty family or from a wealthy family, that is their greatest resource. That is their pride and joy, and that is in your school. And if you're not aware of that, that can keep you up at night a lot.
What gives you hope?
Kids.
Yeah, the students all the time. You know, what keeps me up at night is kind of an example of why culture is so important. If I have staff not on the same page, or I have something going on in my school, that's honestly what keeps me up at night way more than thinking of the worst thing that could possibly happen. And that's because you got to have a certain level of trust and faith and belief in human beings that things are going to be good. Most people are good. Most people have good intentions, and we're going to go and we're going to still live, and we're going to believe in a place, and we're going to live our lives, and we're going to be a part of what it is. So that stuff doesn't really, that I think about every day, so that you're not oblivious to the fears or the factors that could be out there that could be harmful. But when the culture seems to be, and there's a problem with culture, that's honestly what bothers me the most. Like, we got a problem here because we're not all on the same page with this, or I need to address those kind of things. And then, you know, sometimes it's, and just the idea of how hard it is to give shared responsibility to everyone. And that's what Twain mentioned it earlier. It's not just sitting there saying these things as a principal. You have to work it through your entire staff and believe in them, because you have to give up power or give up authority to let them do their thing. And they're teaching to help impart knowledge and help them, but help kids learn and develop into people. So nobody went into teaching just for one thing. They believe in the whole person that they're working with, and they believe in their content, and they believe in all those things. And it's complicated. It's a complicated issue. But those teachers and the people working with those students every day are what give you hope, along with the students themselves.
Yeah, I thought about a story. You know, I just got done dealing with a seventh grade boy who struggled with a disrespectful action in the lunchroom. And so if you take that disrespectful action at lunchroom, and that's all it was, he was just a bad kid, bad choice, give him the consequence and move on. But that wasn't him. That was his first time. There was something that wasn't right. And it took me a half an hour by the time we sat down with the teacher, who also came in, and all three of us sat down, and eventually got at the fact that he was moving. And because of all these moving things, he wasn't happy with it. And so that's where the and so then you help him understand, well, okay, I get everybody has those feelings. And what are you gonna, and he's a totally different kid today. And so when you send the email out about what had happened, everybody was like, well, yeah, he had a hard day in here too. And I thought there were some up. But and so if you don't have people constantly wrapping their hands around kids with a culture like that, life is hard. And these kids need people. And those teachers that I would agree that Tim's talked about, that's the real that's the culture of your school, is that wonderful staff who consistently says the kid's more important than a textbook.